Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance FIL 240 for spring semester 2026.
Today, the weighted average cost of capital. This will take advantage of this, the calculation will take advantage of the Excel spreadsheet, WACC.Excel. So this will make it a little bit more straightforward in preparing the data so that you can get the answers extracted out of it.
Can you see what's going on up there with that gentleman with the phone holding it up right in the middle, up towards the top?
A couple of other things on the agenda here is that you will have a quiz on Monday, and that Monday quiz will include, stock valuation primarily, and some of the weighted component cost of capital analysis. And you've got the tools to be able to do that. And this is the first quiz where you will sign out. You'll do attendance radar to sign in, but you'll also be signing out of quizzes and the final exam from now on, because we have a few students who are deciding that they can just pretend they finished, go out and use an AI on their phones to get their answers. So you'll be checking out as well as checking in for exams from this point forward in the course. What else was I thinking? At the end of this one, a few of you just couldn't get that link right for the Excel assignment. And so we'll be up here after I close the class for the day to help you out, get that out, get that in. Otherwise, I appreciate you for your panicked endings for some of you getting it done. And I think I've got all of your scores in, except for those who couldn't get the link to work the right way. And if that's the case, come up here, we'll get the link set up for you at the end after I've done the lecture today. But for the time being, though, let's have a look at the numbers here. And we're having a strong day on the street, and there's some talk, there was no bear market. Well, we'll see in the days to come, but we definitely can celebrate today. The entire world, don't think this was just the U.S., the entire world was in a bullish mood today, and that's one of those things where it kind of catches fire. On the east side of the world, they have an exciting day. They see global numbers that look good, and that kind of infects every market as the sun rises from the east across in Asia over into Europe and then into the United States. It's sort of like a herd behavior, and you do see that from time to time. And there are some traders who will actually watch what's happening in, let's say, Tokyo and in Hong Kong and maybe Australia. But then they'll say, okay, this is a bull day over there. And then they'll watch the Eastern European stock markets to see when the sun comes up over there. Are they picking this up? And then they'll watch and say, okay, now let's watch Western Europe and London. And they seem to have that same bullish sentiment. What that will do is that will encourage the traders here in the United States, when the sun comes up here and the bell rings in the morning, they'll say, okay, this is a bullish day around the world. Let's jump in on it. So sometimes you can watch those markets over there and they can give you a hint as to how you should trade for the day over here. And I'll mention something about that again in a minute here. But as you can see, across Europe, it actually wasn't much of a, it jumped at the beginning, and then it kind of crawled up a little more as the day went along. And you can see that London had a really, no, that's not London. Where's London? Oh, London's right there. There have been, right in the last few minutes of trading, there was a spike over in Europe and in London too. There was, see that little top jump there at the end? Well, that was enough to get everything going over here. And so you see that the Dow is right now up almost 1%. And the Standard & Poor's is up more than 1%, a little more. And the NASDAQ is having a big day of 1.75% up. So far, so good. The markets are just continuously rising through the day. There are some rumors out there that the Middle East situation is going to cool off and the war will be kind of fizzling out. I don't see it from the analysts I'm looking, I'm watching. They're not saying that, but there seems to be some sentiment that this could be over fairly soon, which would be good news for you folks, because I certainly don't want you getting drafted or something like that. But anyway, coming over here, we got a problem. Of course, crude and Brent are teetering right in the $100 a barrel that area. That's actually better than it was, but still gas prices have jumped back up again. I think I paid $1.09 a gallon for a fill up yesterday, which was kind of hurts. And that is going to be sort of a slowdown, hurt the economy. Now, keep in mind also that just as a context for you to put into your broader global thinking that I want you to have, is that, remember that oil isn't just oil to make gasoline for cars. It also makes what we call the distillates, the diesel, jet fuel, and kerosene. But then it also, that about a fourth of it goes into other products. One of those other products is fertilizer. And fertilizers are actually, a lot of it is hydrocarbon products out of the refineries. And so when the fertilizer prices go up, that means that the crop prices are going to, crops are going to become more expensive to produce, and that will be passed along to consumers. So you get hit in several different ways when oil prices go up. You get hit directly with your cost of your gasoline. You also get hit secondarily with the cost of diesel fuel, which is what trucks use to transport all that stuff to you. And then you get hit with the jet fuel price increases if you're going to travel. But then you're being hit on this level that most people don't even think about. Pharmaceuticals use hydrocarbons. Fertilizers use hydrocarbons. Plastics, which is about everything you have, has plastic in it. Those get hit by oil prices because they use hydrocarbon products. So when these prices of oil go up, they are actually creating an increased cost to for a whole bunch of things, a lot of the things that we have in our lives. That's why when these oil prices go up, we worry about their impact on economic activity, and it does slow down an economy. We're already in a light recession, notwithstanding what you hear from the government's official statistics, and that can deepen it as people spend more money that they can't afford to spend. On the other hand, though, we do have a bull day on the market, and just as a quick note here, that 10-year treasury, where is the one I want? The 10-year, there it is, 10-year bond. It is just kind of, it looks like it's got a resistance level down there at 4.30%. It went up almost to 4.50%, and then it settles back down, but it doesn't seem to want to come below that sort of like a substrate there of 4.30%. So if it breaks to the downside, that could be some good news. But it doesn't seem to want to do that. It seems to want to keep bouncing off that 4.30 or so and then rise again. That is a deterrent to economic activity, those high interest rates that we're experiencing right now in the U.S. economy. Okay, now just a quick look at the sector map. As you can see, it is definitely a bull day. The green, darker greens and lighter greens are all over the place. We do have a couple of reds, and that energy sector, that's a blood red. That means it's down a lot. In other words, a composite of stock prices that are related to energy are on the are definitely down a lot today. So that's a little concern. And consumer defensibles are down a little bit today. That's a lighter shade of red, almost a pink. So it, you know, they're having a little struggle today. But it's nothing really too major that's going on out there right now. But as far as stock prices go, if, just to show you about the energy, about the, well, let me look at the energy sector real quick. Something, Conoco, Phillips, I've shown you this one before. See how they're doing today. Yeah, down. Ooh, down lots. That's a hard down. Energy sector, negative, heavy negative. Another one in the energy sector might be Marathon Oil, MRO. It's up, and it is up. No, that's Melrose, darn it. I see these, and I think, why couldn't I have invested in that? Marathon Oil. There it is, MPC. I keep forgetting its trading symbol. MPC, yeah, way down. The energy sector is getting slapped hard today. And part of that would be their cost of their input is high. And of course, that's not good for profits. And you think, well, they can pass it along to consumers. Not all of it, and not rapidly can they. So they're, the, this sector is hurting. Let me try this one. Suburban Propane Partners, it's down too. Not terrible, not down a lot, but it's down. Now, propane, of course, is not like gasoline, but propane is a hugely important part of some sectors of the economy, especially related to home heating, but also to agriculture. One of the things that we talk about looking at, you know, whether a propane stock is going to go up or down, is we look at the weather. If there is, if we are having a wet season of growing, we're having a wet season now, which isn't, which is a problem in itself, and I'll explain that in a minute. But if we have a wet season and the crops are taken out of the field wet, that means that they require a lot of drying once they get to the elevators, and that's propane. And so if it's a wet season, especially toward the harvest, that's good for, that increases demand for propane, which makes propane companies have a better year, and so their stock prices go up. So we kind of watch the season's rains as a guide to that. Now here's the other side of that. Even though we have a drought, we had something of a drought through the winter and into the early spring. Now we've got a lot of water. Yay for crops. Not exactly, because as long as those fields are wet, the seeding cannot be done. They can't go into soaking wet fields because they'll compact the soil, and therefore you won't be able to put the seeds into the ground. So we don't want too much water in the rain in the spring, because even though that provides a nice base of hydration for the soil, it also makes it difficult to get the crops in. So they get in later, and they might not, in some cases, get in at all. So you think about all these different things that are interconnected. The climate, the rains, the situation in the Middle East, they're all part of a matrix. And we as business people, the more we understand that, the more we think in those terms, the more power we have to make good business decisions and investment decisions. But enough of that. I'll let it go for the day. Let me show you something. Now, today I've shown you the weighted average cost of capital. I showed you what it looked like, what the equation is for it, and I'll go through and we'll do a full-blown problem here using the WACC spreadsheet that I've got for you. But before I do that, I emphasize, and I did emphasize this again last week, that the weighted average cost of capital is the weight of debt in the capital structure times the after-tax cost of debt plus the weight of equity in the capital structure times the cost of equity. Now, I didn't mention over here, but the weight of debt, W sub D, plus the weight of equity, W sub E, equals 1.00. In other words, the capital structure is 100% debt and equity. So you could have 25% debt, 75% equity, so that would be 0.25, that would be 0.75 that go into the formula right here. Expanding that equity, as I pointed out before, the equity has several pieces to it. Plus, the weight of equity is actually the weight of preferred times the cost of preferred, R sub pref, plus the weight of common stock retained earnings times the cost of common stock, plus the weight of new stock times the cost of new stock. Now, as I had said, I will not do a problem where the company is considering issuing new common. And the reality of it is, too, that if a company is doing a seasoned offering, that weight of new stock is going to be fairly small anyway. A company that has 1 billion shares out, and so it sells 5 million more, that weight is not going to be impacting a whole lot on the overall. But just as a point of reference here, the weight of preferred plus the weight of common or retained earnings plus the weight of the new common stock is the weight of equity. That's not as deep as it might look. You're saying, look, the components add up to the total of equity. That's all that says there. But emphasizing something here, like I said, companies keep a close eye on WACC, the weighted average cost of capital, because that weighted average cost of capital is the underlying fundamental cost of the company. The company is a composite of its capital sources. Total assets equals total liabilities plus, total assets equal the total liabilities plus the owner's equity. So in other words, this cost of the company is a composite of its cost of its liabilities and the cost of its equity. And that's why companies really, really care a lot about this. I take a little diversion from the book because it has a meaning to it why we care about the weighted average cost of capital. Now remember that the capital structure is a combination of debt and equity of the company. So a company could be 25% debt, 75% equity, something like that. I talked about that when we were doing ratios. But here's kind of an important point to make. on this vertical axis, I'm going to have the weighted average cost of capital. That thing right there. And on this one, I will put one of the two of debt and equity. Now, let me put it as the percent of debt in the capital structure. Now, the percent of equity would be 1 minus that. So we don't have to look at both of them. We can look at one. There was this was a long time ago, maybe 30, 40 years ago. There were these two economists who did, one you don't know, need to know, remember their names, Modigliani and Miller. They made a proposition. They said that no company should have any equity. Every company, by any theory, should be all debt. And here's why. If there is 0% debt in the company's capital structure, that would mean that it would be 100% equity times the cost of equity. So in other words, the weighted average cost of capital, WACC, should be at 0% debt, it should be the cost of equity. Yeah, I mean, because there's a 0% of weight of debt, 100% weight of equity, so the cost, weighted average cost of capital should be all R sub E. However, debt is cheaper than equity. It's cheaper for a couple of reasons. One, it's the interest is tax deductible. The other is debt is less risky than equity, because debt has to be paid before equity. It has a prior claim. So in other words, as you add more and more debt to a company, the weighted average cost of capital should go down. Until, if the company is 100% debt, it should have a cost of R sub DAT. So in other words, if weight of equity is zero, this whole term goes away, so that's 100% times the after-tax cost of debt. So in other words, there should be no reason to have equity in your capital structure, because the more debt you put in, the lower the weighted average cost of capital gets. So, and I kind of tongue in cheek. They said there should be no company with common stock. There should be none. Every company should be 100% debt. And of course, we all know that companies are not 100% debt. They are a combination. And oftentimes, the equity is the bigger portion of the capital structure. So the proposition was a challenge. Why doesn't this reflect reality? And the answer is kind of straightforward, and I kind of see it every year in my own company. You see, as you start adding too much debt to your capital structure, the lenders start asking a higher and higher interest rate on your debt, because you're becoming more risky, because it's kind of getting likely that you won't be able to pay off the debt. So in other words, in reality, yeah, at first, as you add debt, it'll just go down because the debt is cheaper. But then there comes a point where you start adding too much debt and the lenders start making you pay more and more, until there comes a point where you are actually rising. Your weighted average cost of capital goes up. Let me explain how this worked in my company. Every year I get what's called a working capital loan. That is an amount of money that I am able to draw on during the lean months to build inventory, pay salaries and wages and all that kind of stuff. And then when the selling season starts, I pay that back down to zero, and then I start it all over again. This is very common for retailers to do this. That usually, for most retailers, the Christmas season is their big season. The rest of the year, they borrow money month over month to take care of themselves. And then during the Christmas season, starting in October or September, then they start paying it off. Now, here's the interesting part. Here's what where it comes in. In my working capital management loan, they have it now, and I wish I had written the numbers down. Any amount up to $10,000 that I draw runs at, right now, it's 11.99%. From $11,001 up to $15,000, I pay 14.99%. And any amount that I draw down up from $15,001 to $22,000, I pay a whopping 19.99%. You see what's happening? As my capital structure leans more and more toward debt, the cost of the last dollar I borrow goes up. That's the curve right there. Eventually, it begins to overrun. It's no longer debt. It's no longer cheaper than equity. It actually becomes ridiculously more expensive. Here's the bottom line of this, though. A real whack curve will look something like this. And we've done, you know, these are these studies that are done for term papers, master's thesis, dissertations, and research papers. A true whack curve is going to look something like this. Up to 100% debt. Now they can have, that low point can be, let me erase this and show you real quick here. Interestingly, different industries have different shapes of that curve. You'll see some industries where the shape is, it bottoms out at very low percent debts before it starts to rise again. And then there are others where it's kind of like about equally balanced. And then there are some where it's really leaning toward debt. The bottoming out is at a very high percentage of debt. And it's characteristic of the industry. The companies in an industry will all look very similar. But among industries, you will see a considerable amount of difference. I want to point out here, this bottoming out point has a name. It's called the optimal capital structure. The optimal capital structure. The optimal capital structure is the combination of debt and equity that minimizes the weighted average cost of capital. The optimal capital structure is the combination of debt and equity that minimizes the weighted average cost of capital. The optimal capital structure is the combination of debt and equity that minimizes the weighted average cost of capital. Now, you've been with me long enough to know that if I repeat a definition three times, it's most very, very likely to be on quizzes and the final exam. And this one is meaningful because companies, they're interested, very interested in that weighted average cost of capital because they are very interested in finding and maintaining that bottom point. What percentage debt and what percentage equity is it? And it will be different for different companies. And that is a very realistic, of very realistic importance. Now, that optimal capital structure might come down at 25% in debt, 75% equity. It might be 55% debt, 45% equity. It will be characteristic of the industry. And so the companies will want to work very hard to keep their capital structure as close as they can to that optimal combination of debt and equity. It won't stay there on its own. This gets a little bit subtle, and I'll repeat it a little bit and a few times during the classes from now on. I want you to look at something. Suppose that a company is making big profits every year. That would mean that its retained earnings is going up every year. That would mean that the percent of debt is actually going down because they're accumulating retained earnings. So their percent of equity is increasing. So a company, just by virtue of being successful, would tend to drift toward lower percentage of debt, and they would be coming up this way. On the other hand, a company that is losing money every year, that means that retained earnings are being drained, which makes, by definition, the percent of equity go down and the percent of debt go up. So they would drift that way on that curve. That's why they have to watch that curve. As a matter of fact, there are even a number of companies, they will see that their percent of debt is going too low for the optimal capital structure. So what they'll do is simply issue debt just to get the percent debt back up so that they come back down on the curve. As a matter of fact, on the other side of it, I saw this for the first time some years back in a prospectus. In other words, a selling docket for a document. A company was doing a seasoned offering of stock. In other words, they were selling stock. They were already public. They were just selling more. And what they said in the prospectus, they just bluntly said it. We're selling this stock to return to our optimal capital structure. In other words, they were selling stock because their percent of debt was higher than they wanted it to be. And it was all because they wanted to come back down. They had too much debt, so they were selling stock, equity, so that the percent of debt would go down and they would come back toward their bottoming out point on the WACC curve. So yeah, this does matter. Now let me show you something here. This is, let me get it over here. Now, this is in your Canvas Files folder. It's called WACC Industry, WACC Industry. This shows you, this is actually, let me see if I should reduce this just a little bit. There we go. By industry, the cost of equity, first it gives you the beta, gives you the cost of equity, and so that would be the weight of equity, equity divided by debt plus equity. Then it gives you the cost of debt, the tax rate, so there is the cost of debt times 1 minus t right there, and then it gives you the weight of debt, debt divided by debt plus equity, and there at the end, there's your WACC. By industry. And so if you're a company in a specific industry, you can look at that and figure that's probably about the weighted, the optimal capital structure for my industry, because that's a composite of all the companies that are surviving in that industry. So they must be, the average must be pretty close to that optimal capital structure. So if you look across here, this is surprising. There are a couple of things that are surprising here. One is how different these numbers can be. You notice, for example, in advertising across here, the weighted average cost of capital is 10.75%. But you come down here to air transport, it is much lower, 6.98%. And it's all over the place. Look at these real cheap ones, like banks have a very low cost, banks, any kind of banks you want to talk about, very low weighted average costs of capital. And if you think about it, that makes sense because they are the first, they are the source of capital, so they can get it pretty darn cheap. And you go down all through here, you'll see numbers that are very high and relatively low by comparison. So for example, coal has a high weighted average cost of capital. It's not an efficient industry. Coal has massive amounts of capital input. It has massive amounts of risk in it. And so its weighted average cost of capital is quite high. You go down and look at some of these others, and it's a nice thing to have a look to see what different industries are. Like, for example, look at this. Information services actually has a very high cost of capital. And again, it's because there is so much capital. You look at information technology, you look at server farms. They are like 10 football fields, 100 football fields if you look at some of them. They are massive capital investment. They drink capital. And so they are expensive AF, comparatively speaking. Let me draw something down here. There's one that I always try to bring up. I wish I could remember which one it was. Oh. Look at the difference between retail, physical retail, brick and mortar, versus online retail. There's that same phenomenon again. Isn't that interesting? You find these, and you know, just start thinking about, okay, why are these two that look so related so wildly different? I wanted to, oh, there we go. There's the two I like. Semiconductors. If that isn't the highest, it's near the highest on the list. The semiconductor industry has a ridiculously high weighted average cost of capital. And guess why? It's not ideas, it's not services, it's physical, hardcore manufacturing on a high-tech level, so it's even more expensive because everything has to be so delicate and precious when you build it. And running down a few, there was one other one I wish I could remember. Oh, here it is. Tobacco. It's a field crop. It is actually a field crop, but it's quite a touchy field crop that requires a very specific set of steps that get it from the plant to the tobacco product. And it's getting worse as time is going along because of regulations that are going crazy. Next thing I want to bring up to you is something here. Notice that the cost of the after-tax cost of debt is very similar from one company to another. So it is the driver is the cost of equity in the weighted average cost of capital. Do you see how all those numbers for debt are right around four, a little more than four to a little less than four? So that's an important thing to keep in mind, is that what causes all the differences in weighted average cost of capital is not the cost of debt. That's fairly uniform. It is the cost of equity. Now, one last thing that I do want to point out here is tax rate. Because you have to know the tax rate. And these are effective tax rates. They're not the statutory 21%, or before that 39%, or before that 70%, or before that 90%. These are what actually happens by industry. And if you look at those tax rates, I think there's only one or two. Oh yeah. This is one of the only ones that pays about 21%. The rest of these, in reality, never mind what they talk about the tax code and the bleeding hearts that say we're taxing our businesses too much. Bullshit. Look at it. That's the number that they are actually reporting of what they paid in taxes. It runs in the single digits to the lower teens for the most part. That's what is actually being paid by corporations. So if you want the real culprit for insane deficits every year and a national debt that you will pay of $39 trillion, look no further than the data that is being reported by the companies themselves. It's very low. So keep that in mind whenever you hear that the tax burden is killing corporations. No, it's not. And only a few corporations do you see them coming even close to pay. Here's an interesting one. Let me get that. Home building industry pays about the statutory amount. There's one down here that's pretty close to. Oh, here it is. Retail, they pay right about what the statutory tax rate is, 21%. So, but they are the exception. Most of them have loopholes, have tax carry-forwards, tax carry-backs, have offshore accounts where they squirrel money away. That's the reality of it. And that's just a minor note along the path of talking about weighted average cost of capital. You notice this interesting touchstone right there. But anyway, enough of that. And by the way, that is, I think that is current as of this January. It may be from last year, but I will update it once the data comes in. This data, by the way, and this is for a good place for you to have a look, is the Stern School at New York University. They produce a lot of data tables like this. Their researchers, they have a sort of like they have this obligation they see to providing objective academic data pools that you can use for your own purposes, for your research, your term papers. So if you're ever kind of interested in prowling around these databases, this is just an Excel sheet that I can download from them. As a matter of fact, in Excel, you can actually just download this from Excel. Just tell it where the website's web address is, and it will pull this down for you. And it updates, like I said, I think they update this every year, but I'm not sure about that these days. But and there are tons of these at the Stern School at New York University. And I cite it down here. I hope I cite it. Yeah, New York University Stern School of Business. And there's the website if you are interested in just prowling around, seeing what they've got to offer. It's a lot of great data, economic and corporate data. And corporations go there all the time, because if I'm in one of these industries, I'm going to be looking at what the industry's weighted average cost of capital is and comparing it to my companies to see if we're close or we're way away from it. And using that as policy directions for us. Anyway, enough of that. Let me show you this. Weighted average cost of capital. And I've given you a problem here where, and I did this on this one especially so that you can actually see, this is the whole problem right here in this light gray. And then you'll see how I peel out the data that I'll need for the white areas. SPK Corp has 22 million shares of common stock. So the first thing I'll do is put where it says number of common stock, common shares, I'll put that there. And then currently priced at $34 per share. So I look around, where is, does it want, there's the price of common stock right there. And I give you explanations. I peel the snippets out from here and put them with arrows, okay? So anyway, that's that. So I got that in there. Just paid a dividend of $1.80 per share. So I look, oh, that's where I put the, and there is a little bit of jumping around in this. It's just sort of, there's no way to make it really perfect, but you just have to look around and get the numbers in the right places. And then I go down a little further, and it has just paid a dividend, of, which is expected to grow at 2.00%. Okay, so I'll put that in the growth rate of the common dividends. And then I'll prowl around in this problem. The company also has 120,000 shares of 1.5% preferred stock. So it has 120,000 shares. That goes there. And it's 1.5% preferred, so I put that as a preferred dividend right there. And again, I do appreciate you're going to jump around a little bit in this. I mean, the architecture of it is just going to have to be a little bit hodgepodge. Okay? And then it's $85 per share, so I put that right there. $63 per share is what it's running right now. Okay. And then the company also has $12 million face value in bonds. So there's the par. Face value is par value. And then those are 4.25%, which goes there. 2031, that's 7 years. Actually, I should change that to 32. Because this was from late last year, so it's 1 year off. You know what I mean. And then the quote is 102.40 on the 100, so I put that there. Just leave everything else alone. Current market price, okay, that's it. What it does is it will do the calculations I showed you yesterday. And then it will also calculate your market weights of each. So for example, the debt at $102.40 on the 100 for 12 million shares, that means the market value of its debt is that much right there. It's calculating that for you. You don't have to do that. And as far as preferred stock, well, it has preferred stock. It has $120 million at $63 a share. So that's how much the market value of its total market value of its preferred is. And then the common stock, it has how many shares? 22 million shares. And those right now are selling at $34 a share. So there's the market cap on the common stock. And then it adds those up, and the total market value of this company is just a sum of the market values of the component costs. That's $772,188,000. And so each of these weights would be that market value divided by the total. The weight of debt in the portfolio is 1.6%. the weight of equity of preferred stock is 7,500,000 divided by the total. And the market value of the common stock is the market cap of the equity, common equity, divided by 772 million. And as you can see, those weights add up to 100%. And then all I do here is a sum product, each of those costs times its weight, just what I did over there, each cost times its weight. And when you add them up, the cost of capital, weighted average cost of capital, is 7.25%. You can do this with any problem. Like I said, that really the only big thing in the way you use templates is making sure you get every number in the slot it belongs in and don't forget anything. And that's how you do these problems. So I give you one of these on a quiz and on the final. It looks like an absolute nightmare to do, and it used to be. This was easily, even for a decent math person, a half an hour. As long as you can just key the numbers in where they belong, you've got your answer in about a minute. Just make sure that you can do this, because I will ask, I'll give you one of these. It'll look like you're a math, a finance hero, because you can get the answer, and it's all because Excel works hard, so we don't have to anymore. Just get comfortable with it, and you'll have some practice with it, and it will be on the next one. Now, if you would do your attendance radar, I would appreciate that right now. Get it done. And again, on Monday, you'll have your quiz, your next quiz. And this will be the first quiz where you will have to come up and show us that you have completed the quiz for us to sign you out. If you don't sign out, then automatically your quiz gets a zero after the class is over. You can't go out and then say, I forgot it. We'll have signs on the doors saying, did you sign out up front? So make sure that you're ready for that when it's over. And that is all I have for you today. I thank you.